We're holding Binyan HaBayit. This is, I think, our 15th class in our series. And we're continuing our understanding of the engagement process, the halachic aspect. And we're reading in Rav Eliyahu Ki Tov's Tej Lamed Chet. We stopped 2 weeks ago. We had discussed how we could understand what the engagement between a husband and wife is based upon the Navi's description of what the engagement between the Jewish people and Hashem is. And the Navi describes it, what we say every morning as we put the tefillin, the strap around our fingers. Ve'erastich li, Hashem says, I engage you to me. That. We say, ve'erastich li le'olam, forever, the eternity, the eternal aspect of the relationship. Ve'erastich li betzedek, with righteousness, that a person has to be just and righteous with his wife. Be'mishpat, with justice, that a person always has to remember that even when his wife does something that's wrong, he can't lose his state of justice. Bechesed, with extra kindness, that a person can't be with his wife going to task to the letter of the law. A person always has to have extra kindness. And berachamim, with mercy, that a person always has to give his wife everything she wants. I don't know if everything she wants, but the things she wants and needs before she asks for them. And that's the extra rachamim, that a person is supposed to try and figure out what she wants before she asks for it. Ve'erastich li be'emuna, which is where we left off last 2 weeks ago, that the relationship has to be one that's based on truth, that a person can't be nice on the outside and on the inside he's all upset and he's thinking all kinds of nasty thoughts and he's just playing laying a facade. And all these were things that God says he does towards us. So these are things that a husband has to do for the wife. These are all the husband's responsibilities. And what's her one responsibility? V'yadat et Hashem. You have to know Hashem. And that's where we're holding. The wife's one responsibility as opposed to the husband's. Because the wife, her nature, her innate tendencies are to have all these traits within her. The wife is automatically going to have extra kindness, extra patience, extra fairness, extra faithfulness. It's a rarity that a woman doesn't have these traits. It's very common that her husband doesn't recognize that she has them. This goes back to Adam Arishon's sin. Adam Arishon doesn't have value and appreciation for his wife the way he should, and that's a recurring theme in our lives. That we don't have appreciation for Hashem, and we don't have appreciation for the person that's closest to us, for our spouse. Azara is a warning.
Warning?
Yeah. Like zehirut means to be careful. Azara is a warning. Correct. So the woman doesn't need these warnings because these are built in. These are natural tendencies by some women more, by some women less. And obviously, I'm not telling you, you're going out with a girl, you could assume she has all these tendencies. Check it out because there's a balance. But at the end of the day, I always tell guys when they're getting married that the beginning seems very, very tough. And it is tough. It takes getting used to. But you have to remember that as tough as it is for you, it's 10 times as tough for her. She might not complain about it as much as you do. Maybe. I doubt it. But it's much harder for her. She has far more responsibilities the second you get married. Be it on the surface, where a guy walks out the next day and he's same way he was the day before. Same yarmulke, same tefillin. Maybe he gets to wear a talis. He gets a little bit more honor and shul. The woman, suddenly her hair. If anyone knows what girls are like about their hair, suddenly she has to cover her hair. That's a big thing for a girl. Suddenly she has responsibilities to the house. Suddenly she has responsibilities of family purity. She's the one that has to take care of that. You could help her out, but then they, it's her job. Her whole life takes on a radical shift. She has responsibilities of buying the food, cooking, cleaning. So of course the husband's going to help. But at the end of the day, she's got a ton of responsibilities she didn't have before. So part of being a woman, by the sheer nature of being a woman, is having all these qualities. It's not part of being a man.
What's the exact point she puts on that she got with her hair, like right after the chuppah, right after the...
Different opinions. There are opinions that say after the cheder yichud. There are opinions that say only after they go home. You have to ask the Masader Kiddushin, the rabbi that arranges the chuppah. He's the one that calls the shots at your wedding. You shouldn't call a different rabbi and then walk up and tell that rabbi, well, my rabbi said. If you're inviting that rabbi, he's officiating the wedding. He's the one that should call the shots. That's his job. That's why he's there. So ask him. V'yadat et Hashem. But what's the one responsibility that God tells the woman? He says, know Hashem. Not know your husband. That's going to happen naturally. Know Hashem. The Gemara says, based on the verse in Tehillim, that when Moshe walked into the camp, so all the men would go to their wives and tell him, I don't want to see you alone with Moshe. Sorry. They tell him, I don't want to see you alone with Moshe. What, they're worried about Moshe? Moshe wasn't even with his own wife. What are they so worried about? So there's halacha, we learned the laws of Sota, that a husband could tell his wife, I don't want you to be seen alone with him, and that means that she has to be even more careful than the laws of Yichud. Remember, we learned that a few weeks ago in the Parsha of Naso. So the Gemara says every man in the Jewish camp called his wife over and did that there. He told her, you're not allowed to be alone with Moshe like a Sota. I'm worried what's going to be with you. The question is, what's going on here? What are they so worried about? Moshe Rabbeinu, the holiest man on earth, that's what they're worried about? So the Maharal has a very interesting insight into the understanding of what happened there. The Maharal says that I'd be careful what I say about Moshe. But Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva to a guy who he once gave a speech and he spoke improperly about Lot's daughters. Lot's daughters, they had incest. They lived with their father. And our sages say they had good intent. The Pasuk says they had good intent. They thought the world was destroyed, that there was no other way to continue the human race. And this man spoke improperly about Lot's daughters. And they started coming to him in his dreams. And they came to him and they were upset at him. So he sent a letter to Rabbi Feinstein asking him what he's supposed to do. So Rabbi Feinstein discusses, first of all, how careful a person has to be when he discusses people who are much greater than he is. That's about Lot's daughters.
yeah, but you're the one who told us about this.
Okay.
Yeah, well, she didn't know.
So the Maharal, what? The Maharal explains that there's an aspect where the husband has to feel like he's giving a certain tone in the home. Our sages described it like chomer v'tzura. You have the material and you have the shape. The wife gives the material and the husband's supposed to give the shape. Every husband has to feel to a certain extent that he's giving the shape to the home. That's one of the things that are especially difficult here at the Machon. A guy has to learn and he doesn't know what shape he wants to give the house. So on the one hand, he wants to give a shape and he has, if he's a healthy male adult, he has that need and that urge to feel like he's giving shape to his home. And on the other hand, he doesn't exactly know how to do it. So a smart wife is going to help him out with that. There's a... Okay, we'll get back to that. But these men were in a situation where every question that arises in the house, they say, wait a second, I got to ask Moshe. So they felt like they were losing that element of building a home. They were no longer the ones giving the defining roles in the house. They were no longer the ones defining the parameters of the home. They were no longer the ones defining all of the nature and all of the avira, the spirit and the, how do you translate avira? The atmosphere in the home. Avira. So Moshe is the one that's defining their homes for them. They felt like they were losing a special relationship with their wives to Moshe. So they all felt jealous. So they all told their wives, hey, you got to keep a distance from him. We always recommend that couples have a rabbi, an external halachic figure in the house. I also have a rabbi. I don't answer the halachic questions in the house because if you're the rabbi in your own house, then you're going to say, you have to check rice. It's not enough to just go like this. You have to check it clearly on a white platform and go slowly through it. So every day you're going to come home that your wife makes rice, she's going to say, you know, I checked the rice like you said. That's why I didn't have time to put up the beans. That's why I didn't have time to put... I said that's the halacha. You said. What do you mean that's the halacha? Every question that comes up, I didn't turn on the heater for Shabbos because you said we can't use the Shabbos clock. I said that's what the halacha says. What do you mean? Our neighbors use Shabbos clocks. Our neighbors use rice without checking. Our neighbors eat this heksher. You said. So smart husband takes the halacha out of the house. Says, I don't say anything. We'll call the rabbi. Whatever he says, that's what goes. But that's because on every other front, the husband with his wife could feel like he's setting the tone in the house. But in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, they couldn't even have that because every question was coming from Moshe. The tone in the house, the nature of the house was being set by Moshe. So that's why the Maharal explains that the husbands all felt this need to certify their relationship with their wives and to keep Moshe out of it. Rav Kitov is saying over here something which a person could feel is competition. Rav Kitov is saying that the wife needs one commandment in the house, and that is remain God-fearing. Because there's the fear that the woman is going to be too attached to her husband, and it's going to drive her beyond being God-fearing. Our sages say a person shouldn't be too stringent in his house, too careful, and too angry. A person can't instill fear in his home. People sometimes feel like, I want my house to be a God-fearing house, so if my wife dares light candles too close to Shabbos, I'll yell, I'll bang, I'll make a ruckus. If she buys a heksher that I don't think is good enough, so I gotta instill God-fearingness into the house. So I'll make a ruckus. Our sages say that if a husband is a tyrant in his home, then he's going to ensure that his home will not be a God-fearing home. If the wife has to make the meal and he's coming home and she's nervous because the meal's not ready, so she's going to buy that cheaper meat. She won't go to the next store because she has to have it ready when he comes home. It's not a good heksher, but she can't afford for him to come home and not have the meal ready. She has to light Shabbos candles and she didn't get it all done. And the sun just set. So yeah, but if he walks home and the candles aren't lit, so he's going to be all upset. So she's going to light those candles. What a wife wants most is to have her husband happy and happy with her. And a wife needs to feel like she's the source of her husband's happiness. So a husband has to give her that feeling. But one of the driving forces behind everything a wife does is the need to feel like she's the source of her husband's happiness. And she wants to feel it on the deepest level, that she's giving him happiness on the deepest level, and she wants to sense that on the deepest level. Now, that could bring her to not fearing Hashem. It's very easy for that to happen. And that's why the prophet has to warn, remember, to be God-fearing. That's the only warning she needs. Everything else that the husband will not do instinctively, because he has other tendencies. She doesn't need those warnings. Because she has the tendency, the need, the want, to be the source of her husband's happiness, she's going to do all the other things by instinct. So the one warning she does need is don't go overboard. Remember, there's a limit. Sometimes when couples are engaged, so the in-laws throw comments. And the chassan gets nervous. He wants her to wear a cloth over her head. And her parents are talking to her about wearing a sheitel. So he gets nervous. Her mother's telling her, what, you're going to lose all that beautiful hair? Put on a sheitel. A husband has to know that if he builds the relationship well with his wife, he doesn't have to say much. There's no need to go head on with the in-laws. What's going to happen after they get married is that all she's going to want is what he wants. She's not going to be interested in what her mother thinks looks nice. She's going to be interested in what he thinks looks nice. I was once at a certain couple's home, and the wife was telling over how the most expensive dress she bought was when they won a certain lottery, and she got a gift certificate to a certain store, and she went out and bought this great dress. So her daughter asked her, Ma, how come we never see you wearing that dress? So she said, well, the first time I wore it, I asked your father what it looks like. And he said, it's okay. I just bought the most expensive dress in my life, and he's telling me it's okay? So I just lost all taste for that dress. And that's a true story. And that's a true tendency. She wants to feel like she's beautiful in his eyes. She's making him happy. So when he gives her such an answer, that's it. He took all the air out of the dress. So young chassanim don't have to be too nervous. With time, that's what's going to happen. What we have to be careful is that as the relationship builds to a true relationship, there's a human tendency, and a, specifically a human male tendency, to fear intimacy. On the one hand, we need it. But on the other hand, our need for autonomy, for our privacy is so great that sometimes as the relationship builds and we share with our partner and we start getting close to our partner and it starts getting really close, that scares us. And so we put up boundaries. So we annoy the partner. Or we make sure the relationship is at a distance. It's very common that a wife is going to ask her husband, "Why do you love me?" It's common. I mean, come on. You've read Aesop's Fables. You've read all these books. Let me enumerate the ways in which I love thee. It's all a lie. If you love her, you can't enumerate it. If you really love the person, you can't start saying, "I love this, and I love that, and I love the other thing." Just as we discussed in our introduction to the Kuzari, that there are two ways of knowing a person. You could describe a person to someone else, and you could say, he's the guy with the glasses, he's the guy with the beard, he's the guy with the blonde hair, he's the guy that has hair down to his shoulders, he's always well-dressed, he's always got his shirt tucked in, he's got a big nose, he's got flat eyebrows. You could say a lot of things, but at the end of the day, most of them could change. They're all external. They'll grow older, they'll get a facelift. That's not the person. And sometimes, you know what a person looks like, and someone comes over to you and asks you, what does he look like? You say, I don't remember. So what do you mean? You say, I don't know. Does he wear glasses? I don't know. What color eyes? I don't know. You'll meet that person anywhere. You'll recognize him, because you know what the person is. You don't know the details. You know the whole. If you break it down to details, that's not love. If you break it down to I love A or B or C, that's all external. When there's a true relationship, so then it's all encompassing. And sometimes wives don't like to hear that. Sometimes they want to hear. So you have to enumerate that you appreciate different aspects. But to say that you love her because of A, B, or C, I don't think so. You love the whole person. You could appreciate the many, many different aspects that make her that special, unique person she is. When we get scared of real intimacy, so what we try to do is remove the relationship from that all-encompassing whole relationship and make it a relationship that's built on details. I love your mind. I love your looks. I love your kindness. You could say you love a lot of things, but it's all external. It's much easier because then a person doesn't have to open himself up all the way. But it's much harder because a person will never have the satisfaction of a true relationship. Sometimes you see spouses that you ask yourselves, why are you making such an issue of such nonsense? Is it really that important to you to wear a sheitel? Is it really that important to you to, I don't know, grow long hair? To wear glasses that she doesn't like? And sometimes you get the feeling that people have to maintain, I'm still the boss. I still control myself. Yeah, it's true. Every person has to still feel like he's in control of himself. But that shouldn't come in the way of opening up to the other side. Now, it's true that one of the things that couples have to learn is to respect one another's autonomy at the same time that they're opening up to one another, which takes a lot of time to learn. More often than not, the husband has a hard time learning it. Because wives, as part of sharing their lives with their husbands, very often will ask them questions. What do you think about this dress? I don't know, I don't like it so much. Are you sure you don't like it? Hey, it's okay. Come on, you always like this color. Look, I see you like it. It's fine, so buy it. but you don't like it. But you do like it. If you would have told me you liked it, I would have told you in the beginning to buy it. Why'd you ask me? So I told you the joke I say, but I think it's true. The wife asks the husband for his opinion because she wants him to know what she wants and to want it more than her before she's decided she wants it. But not always when a wife or a girl asks for an opinion is she asking for us to make the decision. I tell young couples that when a wife asks you, what do you think, try asking her back, what do you think? Try getting some input. Try saying, you know, I could see this side, and I think there's maybe a good reason to go this way, maybe a good reason to go this way. What do you think? And very often you hear that maybe she has an opinion. Very often, young couples, the husband thinks, why is she asking me all this? She can't make decisions on her own. So it's very common that you'll hear guys saying, girls can't make decisions. Girls always ask guys to make decisions. And you'll hear girls talking about guys, they're so bossy. You just ask them for an opinion and they're telling you what to do. Because in our book, if you ask me, you're asking me what to do. And in their book, I just want their, we'll discuss it. In our book, what's there to discuss? If you know what you want, so do what you want. If you don't know what you want, I'll tell you what I want. So we have to get used to these two different types of conversation. And this is part of what we said, that when we open up for intimacy, we have to remember to leave space for autonomy. That intimacy doesn't mean I'm going to make the decisions for you. It means maybe we'll think about it together. It means maybe I'm going to open myself up for you expressing your opinion. And what scares guys is that more often than not, they're right. The girls are right. And then when she turns out right, then you tell yourself, why didn't I listen to her? Then you say, okay, next time I just won't tell her. Now that's a wrong decision. That's a decision that says, I'm not man enough to live with the fact that I merited to marry a good, smart wife. Rabbi Twersky writes that when couples have arguments and the spouse turns out right, so sometimes you see that one side doesn't want to give in, doesn't want to be wrong. He says, always ask yourself, if you're going to turn out right, it means you married a loser. So be happy that she's right. You married a winner. You married someone who has a good head on their shoulders. So the last point that we say in the relationship between Hashem and the people, and that's the point that the woman has to have, is v'yadat et Hashem. To maintain that faithfulness to Hashem in spite of the fact that she's going to have this great faithfulness to her spouse. A person's heart, a person's tendencies are far more difficult than his wife's. And because he has stronger tendencies to be swayed right and left, he has the ability to defy the laws that God has set in the world. God says, go into the land. He could say, no, I'm scared. He could say, no, we don't stand a chance. God says, the house, when you build a home, has to be holy and pure. The man is capable of overriding that. And a point aside, you should know that the laws of family purity are most difficult in the beginning. And everyone keeps them. When you get married, you're going to see one of the most awesome, and I rarely use the word awesome, but here I really think it is awesome. Ordinarily, I think the word awesome should only be used in relationship to God. But this is awesome. The fact that every man within his home, no one knows what's going on behind closed doors. No one knows. And no one knows if you're maintaining family purity or not. Only you and your wife know. And the day after you get married, the last thing you're going to want to do is uphold those laws. And that's where a person has to hold himself and contain himself and say, there's a certain way, there's a home that I want to build, and I'm going to do it, even though I don't want to do it. And when you think about it, hey, everyone around you is doing it. So the first thing is, no, they're not doing it. I'm telling you they're doing it. I'm telling you, as a guy who gets the questions, I see the questions that come my way. They're doing it. And every person has to do it. And after it becomes second nature, after a few months, two years, it gets easier. But a person has to have strength. A person has to have strength. Judaism expects us to be strong. If you think you're strong, so in Judaism we say you're strong when you can contain yourself. Strength is defined by a person who could conquer his tendencies. So the male tendency is to be swayed, and to be swayed very strongly. And even the purity and the holiness of the home, the male tendency could sway and override it. And that's where his wife is supposed to contain him. We say that a Jewish wife, when she lives with her husband, we trust that you could have as many women as you want in the house, he's not going to do anything wrong. That's halacha. His wife is considered that she protects him. But let's say a Jewish woman, she's going on a train, and she gets a kibbutz, there's a non-Jewish man and his wife. So the halacha says she has a problem of yichud. You could say maybe anyone could walk in at any time or something else. But we say the fact that his wife is there doesn't mean nothing's going to happen. You can't trust a non-Jewish wife to contain her husband. But you could trust the Jewish wife. Shows us the power she's going to wield in the house. Going back to the time of Tanakh, going back to the time of the Gemara. The woman can overcome her tendencies, and we trust her more than we trust the man. And that inner strength is what is going to be the foundation for the house as being a God-fearing house. And that's why the one warning the woman has to be told is maintain that strength. Know Hashem. Because you're the anchor that's going to keep the house within the confines of the religion. Be it in time of Avram, that Avram wanted to include Yishmael. And our sages say that Avram went beyond the boundaries with Yishmael. Avram was too soft with Yishmael. And that's why he ended up hating Yishmael. He ended up seeing that his son was a wild animal. But he didn't treat him right. His wife said, no, that's enough. You've gone too far. Be it Yitzchak with Esav. At the end of the day, even the patriarchs needed their wives to be the anchor. When a man is Mekadesh, he engages his wife, and in Hebrew we call it Mekadesh, Kiddushin. And when the woman accepts the Kiddushin, he tells her, Harei at Nekudeshet li. You are, behold, set aside in holiness for me to be my wife, Kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, as the fashion of Moshe and the Jewish people. The two of them, these two aspects, the aspects of Mekudeshet, set aside in holiness, and the aspect of doing it in the fashion of Moshe and Israel. So that Kiddushin is a relationship that's going to be founded in truth, in eternity, in tzedek, in righteousness, in mishpat, in justice, in chesed, in extra kindness, in rachamim, with extra compassion, and together with the knowledge of Hashem and the fearing of Hashem that's going to watch over the couple. That's the foundation of the Jewish home. That's the beginning. We started last week, we discussed the fact that a person can always be serving himself. Even in the service of his creator, a person could be serving himself. Serving the creator so that it'll be good for him. And the same thing in a relationship between a person and his wife, a person's focus could always be, what's in it for me? And we discussed how that's how the West trains us. And the West always presents the woman as the object of pleasure for the men in every advertisement, everything you see. And we discussed also the aspect that it's true, that if it's going to be good for her, it's going to be good for me. But that we have to learn to really love, to love the other person. The other person. And we left off, we wanted to begin discussing cynicism. We discussed how relationships can be internal or external. And sometimes there's a tendency to externalize things. See someone, we discussed last week, Eddie Murphy. When you see someone cynical, More often than not, that someone who can't connect with society internally, but someone who could only connect externally. One of the ways he could connect with society is by mocking society. And at some point, that explodes. When we're trying to build a relationship, we have to build it internally. And internally means modestly. When you see a couple walking in the street holding their hands, so that's their business. But you have to know that to an extent, they've externalized their relationship. There's an aspect where that's what a couple wants to do. A, because it's easier. It's easier to put her picture on your table than to sit down for supper and look at her, talk to her, listen to everything she has to say, and build a true relationship. It's easier to buy her a gift. It's easier to hold her hand. It's much harder to build a relationship that stems from within, that's going to include true love. And we all have a fear of that. We all have a need for that. When I was young, I was a magician. So one of the things that magicians do is they tell people about themselves. So we could read minds. It doesn't take a lot of brilliance. It takes just two books. And a lot of these books are the books that fortune tellers read as well. How can you tell things about a person when he walks in and sits down in front of you? So if I wanted, I could put on a big turban, and, put on a special suit, and sit down here and tell you guys I'm a fortune teller. I could tell you a lot about yourselves. One of the first things that every fortune teller is going to tell a person that comes down to sit before him is, I sense a feeling of loneliness. And everyone's going to agree with that. How'd you know? Because everyone has that. I could sit down with any one of you, and if I begin with that, and I have a deep voice and a serious look in my eyes, you're going to say, you're right. Now, what's sad is that married people are going to answer the same answer. There's an element of loneliness that everyone feels that we all wish marriage would answer, and initially it doesn't. In order for it to answer that sense of loneliness, it takes a lot of work, and it takes opening up, and it takes building the relationship internally. Refuat or chilut? Zed amanu batchara. We were reminded that our learning is for the sake of Gilad ben Chaviva, the soldier we mentioned in the beginning that was kidnapped. Joking, externalizing the relationship is the easy way to go about it. But then a person is always going to be lonely. In order for a person not to be lonely, in order for a person to have that partner for life, a person has to allow that partner to enter the depths of his world. A person has to be open to bringing that person in. And we're all scared of rejection. Everyone is. The more a person is scared, the more he externalizes. The more he feels he has to have a nice car, he has to look good, he has to tell people how much money he's making, what profession he's in. All these things are things that people do because they're scared. They're scared of rejection. Sometimes they make fun of people. Sometimes they throw jokes. There's nothing wrong with saying a good, clean joke. There's something wrong if the only way I get self-satisfaction and feel self-worth is when I make a joke. Psychologists today describe that there's, in a person's mind, there's the pleasure spot. The thing that can cause people to have a high. And for different people, it's different things. For some people, it's when they gamble and win. So they'll gamble and gamble and gamble because they win. Suddenly they don't feel like they're a loser. Suddenly they feel successful. For some people, it's succeeding in sports. For some people, it's drinking alcohol. We try to develop ourselves so that our highs are from positive things. We don't have control over what's going to give us our high. But we could know that every person is lacking. We were created lacking. And we need a lady at large. We also need a spouse that's going to fill in the gaps. And we have to be prepared to bring that spouse in. And bring that spouse into the depths of who we are. And not be scared of rejection. I'm not talking about dating. I'm just reminding. Everything this class is about marriage. Obviously in dating there are different things that are proper. Cynicism has no room in a marriage. Sarcasm. Cynicism very often represents the pain of the person who's being cynical. It's a way of expressing pain. But cynicism also hurts the other person. And cynicism is a way of distancing. Most things, I haven't done a sentence, but for some reason, one after another that I do know about, are divorced. If they were so funny, how come they couldn't build their relationship at home? Many of them are steady customers at psychologists. Another ones gave me Donald Trump's book. Put out a book on making money. I don't remember what the book's called. How to Be a Millionaire, maybe. I don't remember what it's called. And it's interesting that I was reading it, and I told my wife, I'm convinced his kids are seeing shrinks. Convinced his kids are by psychology. How happy are they? He's a man who's put the focus on external. That's what he's saying even in his book. There's a story, I don't know where it's quoted, maybe it's Yerushalmi. The king that was found sick, and his doctors came and they told him, if you want to get healthy, you're going to get healthy is if you find the happiest thing there is and you wear his clothing. And that's going to take you out of your depression, that'll make you feel better. So he put his men at work and they started looking and seeking for the happiest man there is. And they looked and they looked and they looked until one of them found. He found the happiest man there was. So there are different versions as to what the story was. One version says he was naked. One version says he had almost nothing. And finally, the king came to the guy and he asked him, you're so happy? So he said, yeah. So he said, yeah, what am I missing? What am I lacking? I have everything in the world. The story of that someone once came to him and asked him, how am I going to put these trials and tribulations, the things that are happening in my life? So he told him, so-and-so, the Rebbe in the town, who lost his wife, and he lost his kids, and the rest of the family is taking care of his ill, and he's poor, and he himself is very suffering, and you know all the terrible things that have undergone, that he's had. Go talk, see what he says. So the man says, okay, packs his bag, and he travels to that town, and he comes to that rabbi, and the rabbi answers the door with a big smile. He asks him, what's up? So he tells him, the Chafetz Chaim sent me to you. He says, what can I do for you? So he says, the Chafetz Chaim said I should ask you how a person could put up with the difficult things that happen in his life. I should tell you that? I can't tell you that. I don't know. I don't know. I never had difficult things happen in my life. I'm happy. Nothing. You must be mistaken. He came to the wrong address. I don't know. One of the philosophers once said, there is no good and bad, but men make them so. And don't say that. There is good, there is bad. We have different blessings for good and bad. But happiness comes from within. And sources of happiness is connecting. Someone asked last week, what's the difference between schok and simcha? Simcha, happiness is a positive thing. Simcha, a person isn't to pray unless he's happy. A person will not get prophecy unless he's happy. Positive thing. Schok is not a positive thing. Schok is to joke, to make jest, to laugh. A person can laugh. A person is supposed to laugh out of happiness. not out of lightheadedness and joking. May we all merit to have true happiness, and obviously it's something that takes a lot of work. And siyata d'shmaya, God's help. Shukar.